And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio for this Wednesday. It is, in fact, the 1st of October 2025, 4 minutes past nine. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. It's a damp enough old start around the northwest this morning. Maybe wherever you're listening, it's the same. Or if you're outside the region, a little bit better. Who's to say? We're here, though, to keep you company for the next 3 hours. We've got loads lined up for you, of course. The usual mix of news and analysis and the stories behind the news headlines, creating our own stories, as you can imagine. Features where we chat to people about stories that might be important to you, and your comments too. Very important part of the show. Get them into us as the morning progresses. If there's something you wish to raise or a topic you think you should be discussing, 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts to that number, and you can send voice notes to that number as well to WhatsApp if that suits you. 07491 25000. Caroline is taking your calls as always, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And just to remind you, you can watch the program if you're at home on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, or wherever you have one of those. We're on the YouTube app. We stream the show in its entirety. You can just type in Highland Radio Ireland and we are there for you across our Facebook pages and on the X platform as well. We heard a story there a few days ago about how much it costs really to own a house and how much you have to be earning. And the Finn Valley Voices drilled into those figures a little bit. Pat Holland writes that second-hand semi-detached homes in Donegal have topped 200,000 for the first time, and potential buyers are feeling the pinch. Just 1,100 homes were purchased in the county last year, a drop of over 100 or 8% on the figure for the previous year. And the average age of buyers, 44, indicating that the sector most desperately in need, those with young families, are out in the cold. The median wage of those who managed to purchase a house, €61,000 a year. That's almost 6%. The old mortgage rule of thumb, 3 to 3.5 times your earnings, still holds in Donegal, where average household income is below 1,000 a week. House purchases is impossible for most of us. That is the stark reality. The data doesn't lie. You really need to be earning around €66,000 to buy your average semi-detached in this county. And not much property changing hands, just 1,000 sales, 1,100 sales of properties last year. There you go. How's a semi-detached in excess of 200 now? Speedy process in relation to the awful triple murder in Louth. A man has appeared in court charged with murdering three members of his family at their home in County Louth. This is in the Irish Independent. Robert O'Connor, 31, appeared before a special sitting of Drogheda District Court yesterday evening. The bodies of Louise O'Connor, 56, her husband Mark, 54, and their son Evan, 27, were found at the property on Monday morning. An investigation was launched and a man was arrested near the scene and taken into Garda custody. Yesterday evening, Mr. O'Connor of Drumgowna in Louth Village was brought before the court to be formally charged with three counts of murder. Family members, including Robert's brother, Cian, were in court for the proceedings along with senior investigating Gardaí. The accused is charged with the murders of his mother, father and younger brother at their family home. Detective Garda Shane O'Malley gave evidence of arresting the accused for the purpose of charging him at 4:43pm yesterday at Drogheda Garda Station. The court heard the defendant made no reply after caution when the charges were put to him at 5:45pm. Solicitor Paul Moore requested that his client receive psychiatric treatment in custody and applied for legal aid. Both requests were granted. It's just tragedy on tragedy on tragedy in that awful, awful case. And as you heard on the show yesterday, Louise and Mark were well known, not just obviously in their home county of Louth, but around the country for the various works that they did. On to the Irish Times now, and a study has been done on rising sea levels and its impact on various counties around the country. More than 100,000 houses and commercial buildings, including many new builds, are at increased risk of being affected by extreme coastal events, according to the latest analysis of Every Air Code in Ireland. The projection by Gamma Risk includes potential insurance costs from storms made worst by climate change, amounting to 4.5 billion in a worst case scenario post 2050. the analytics company evaluates risk for local authorities and insurance companies using advanced modelling and mapping. In Donegal, we're up there. Obviously, Dublin would have the highest potential claims. Then it's Clare, Louth, Cork, Galway, Limerick, and then Donegal at 165 million plus change. So if there were a catastrophic weather event post 2050, I beg your pardon, Donegal would be one of the worst affected counties with claims in excess of 185 million. And we also rank high in estimate of rebuild costs. So we're still building houses in strange places, it has to be said, and we've a history of it. I don't know why. You can't get planning in the most obvious of places, but you can get planning then effectively to build a house in a floodplain. Sometimes it seems it doesn't make sense. What else doesn't make sense is the fact that the way the system's set up, low-income families must fork out a third of their weekly income to afford a healthy diet, new research shows. How does it make sense? This is in the Irish Daily Mail that, you know, more healthy food is more expensive. So those with the least to spend can't buy those healthy options. And that's why you see, you know, every action is a reaction. And that's why you see in some of these reports about people's health, you know, be it obesity or cancer or whatever it might be, people from poorer demographics are often more adversely affected. And it comes down to things like this, food choices. You know, bad food, effectively, is cheaper. The latest Save Good Food Basket study highlights challenges facing families at a time when figures confirm food price inflation is running at 4.7% for the year. Save Food, the All-Ireland organisation that promotes food safety and healthy eating, also found that households with a teenager had food bills 20% higher than families who had children of preschool and primary school age. I'm not surprised. A lot of them, they can wolf the food down and not really put on any weight because their metabolism is so strong and they eat. Researchers found that households reliant on social welfare spent a larger percentage of take-home income on food compared to households with an employed adult. Typically, Safe Food said families on low incomes tend to eat less well, which can contribute to higher levels of excess weight and corresponding health complications such as heart disease and type 2 diabetes. And as I say, when you see studies in those areas, often that rings true. A tragic case down the country, and one maybe potentially a word to the wise if it didn't seem obvious to you. And it's in the Irish Daily Star. It's in all papers, but I'm taking it from the Star. The husband of a woman electrocuted in the bath by a charging mobile phone has called for more warnings about the dangers of using them near water. Mother of three, Anne Marie O'Gorman, 46, was pronounced dead at Beaumont Hospital in Dublin October 30th last year. She'd been rushed there by ambulance after her husband had found her unresponsive in an ensuite bathroom at their family home. Joe O'Gorman told Dublin District Coroner's Court yesterday he'd left home at around 6:40pm to drop the couple's youngest daughter, Megan, to her first disco in Portmarnock. He told Coroner Crona Gallagher he had a brief 23-second call with his wife at 7:58pm while driving home at a time he believed she might have already been in the bath. After arriving home the house in Santry, Mr. O'Gorman said he went into the bathroom and found Amory lying on her side in the bath with no sign of movement. And she had been on her phone. The phone fell into the water and this, of course, electrocuted her. I think sometimes people, and I'm not speaking of this lady and her tragic death, sometimes I think people think it's an incredibly low voltage in those phone chargers. But he's saying this should be because phones often now, you know, they say they're IPS rated, that they can go 6 or 7 feet underwater. And he believes that might give people the false impression that you could submerge your phone in the bath. That being said, I would hope, and it's, hey, the more warnings, the better. I think, I hope no one would do it purposely whilst it's charged. I think most people might know that that's presents a greater risk, but maybe we do need more warnings, do we? 086 60 25,000. It's up to Hamas now. It's being framed as such on the international stage, whether or not there is peace in the Middle East. And in The Sun, US President Donald Trump warned Hamas it is 3 to 4 days to accept his Gaza police peace plan or it will pay in hell. Mr. Trump says he has brokered a deal between Israel and Arab and Muslim nations to end the bloodbath reported to have claimed more than 66,000 Palestinian lives. But fanatical leaders of Iran-backed terror group Hamas have yet to respond, raising fears of a bloody last stand in Gaza City. And the one thing, too, it's not really in the papers or it's not anywhere, really. You know, it's the Palestinians that have paid the price here. 66,000 of them have perished and or been murdered and wiped out, genocide. And they're not really at the table. You know, it's America, it's Israel, it's other Arab nations, Muslim countries negotiating, and now it's been put to Hamas. And the fate of, you know, millions of Palestinian people are in the hands of Hamas, effectively, you could say, whether or not you like the deal. Where's the consultation with the people of Palestine? Why don't they do some sort of a, I don't know, I know it's very difficult, but some sort of a snap referendum or what have you, try and sample what the views of the people of the Palestinians are? Because if Hamas, which are a small group relative to the Palestinian population, if they say, nah, stuff this, we're not getting involved in this, it's the Palestinians that pay the price, and yet they've had absolutely no say in the peace deal or whether it should be accepted or not, which seems really quite bizarre. It's been imposed upon them, and it comes down to Hamas. And who's to say how it might be framed so that Israel can go in and do whatever they want to do anyway? You know, it's really quite worrying. No consultation with the Palestinians at all. Finally, the irony, if it's a prescribed illegal organisation that the world, in inverted commas, wiped out, and it's Hamas who has the fate of millions of Palestinians in its hands, you know, why would you trust that organisation who you completely distrust with the lives of millions of people? It beggars belief to me, I'll be completely honest with you. And that's, if I came from Mars and had a look at the situation, it still would make no sense. And finally, in the Irish Daily Mirror, the man convicted of raping and murdering Donegal woman Danielle McLaughlin is seeking a suspension of his life sentence until the High Court in Bombay, India, decides on his appeal. Now, in speaking to Danielle's mom and the legal team post his conviction, you know, they knew it was not necessarily over. They knew that he had the right to appeal, and they didn't really say much about that at that time, that, you know, they were going to let the judicial process play out. But still, you know, when you might think that you've got some of this behind you, and here it is raising its head again. Well, this has left Danielle's heartbroken mum, Andrea Branigan, and her family shocked and in disbelief that he might actually get out whilst appealing. They were well aware that he was going to appeal. Vicar Bhagat, 31, who was sentenced to life imprisonment in February after being found guilty of rape and murder of Danielle, 28, is to have his application for the suspension of his sentence listed on October 13th. The body of Danielle from Boncrana was found by a farmer in a field near Goa. It's a popular area with tourists, and that was in March 14th, 2017. And still another date for the family to contend with, you know, October 13th. And you just have to tick along as much as you can in life with that deadline looming. It's one after the other. Anyway, we're thinking on Andrea and the family, of course, as they await the outcome of that. And it would give them some solace, of course, if someone is convicted of the most heinous of crimes were not allowed out to roam the streets whilst he's appealing that conviction. It would make no sense to release him whilst he's appealing, for me anyway. But I'm not really au fait, obviously, with the Indian judicial system. We spoke yesterday to a young man called Aidan, who is a car enthusiast, and he was pointing out the fact that you can go to other areas, other parts of the country, whereby there are spaces where people, whatever age they are, whatever gender they are, can go and take their cars and diff. And sometimes, you know, you can have no revving outside the venue or no modified exhausts to try and suppress noise and what have you. And he says, and he argued, and he was backed by social worker Billy Bander, that, you know, this would perhaps also, you know, give younger people particularly, I suppose, a space to enjoy their cars, let steam off, and take any of this misbehaviour off the roads. Right, John's with me. Hi, John. Good morning to you. Thanks for your call.
Hey. Morning, how you doing?
Not so bad at all. What's your take on this, John? Would you agree with Aidan?
Well, I would agree with him. We live out in the manor area, and my young fella has a car, and he has a couple of friends. And, you know, now that they can't go to the track and stuff, they're out in the road messing about, you know, different at night and stuff. And I just think Ferries is a great place for the kids. You know, they spend that much time getting these cars together, getting them ready, you know, and then when they've nowhere to go, like, you know, Ferries track, they're going to go out on the road, you know, and they're out on the road. And, you know, it's my son, and I give out to him the whole time, and he's out with no insurance, no tax in that car. And, you know, they're like, somebody is going to get killed on these roads.
It's very hard to speak to young people, and we've all been young before. I mean, to have, you know, your pride and joy car sitting there outside the house and not being able to sort of use it or have the crack in it. You know, we have to understand that not everyone's into this, but lots of people are. You know, young people are going to take risks. They don't understand, like you do as you get older, what the consequences of these risks are.
I understand that, but, you know, if there were a place for these kids to hang out, you know, that there's somewhere for them to go, you know, it's the same as like going to the community centre or going to the boxing club. You know, kids are that are not into the trainer, not, if they're into their cars, they're into their cars, you know.
Yeah.
You're not going to take that out of them. You know, they spend that much time getting these cars ready, and then they're all psyched up, and then whether it's nowhere to go, they're going to go out on the road. And they go down to Ferries, and it's, you know, it's well managed, you know, and there's no trouble in there. Everybody gets on, you know, and it's great for the kids.
And you're saying it's a much safer environment too, obviously.
Well, it has to be a safer environment if it stops them out on the road. My son's out on the road, but, you know, if I, you know, the car's there, if I go away, and the, you know, them boys are out in the evening time. No, they're not out all the time, but I know when the car's, you know, when they're out on it, you know.
And what does that mean? They're going to a junction?
He's not old enough to have his license yet.
Does that mean they're going to a junction or something, or, you know, a wide part?
Yeah, they're going to a junction, and you can see the junctions, you know. They're, you know, all the tire marks and stuff, you know. And it is going to come to, you know, somebody is going to get hurt, because, you know, when they're out there, they're just, they're, you know, I guess they want to, you know, show off the work they've done on their cars and, you know, to their friends, and it's all, you know.
Yeah.
They're a whole group of them, you know, they all meet up, and, you know, maybe once a month or whatever, they're a whole pile of them meet up, you know, somewhere and go diffing out by Glenveigh or wherever they go, you know. But if there are a place for them to go, and, you know, they go down to Ferries, there's food, everything there, you know, it's and, you know, it's not expensive either, you know, and it keeps them off the streets. You know, they're not walking up around the town doing drugs or drinking. They're all into the cars. You know,
yeah.
I just think, you know, there have to be somewhere for these people to go. They're down the country, there's a pile of places they can go. But, you know, if they want to go down there, somebody has to take them. It's more expense, you know. They just need somewhere to, you know, blow off a bit of steam.
Yeah. All right, John, listen, thanks very much for that. An honest assessment of the situation. I appreciate it. Michael, what's your take on this? Good morning to you, Michael.
Morning, Greg. How are things?
Not too bad. You're actually local to the area of where Ferries Yard is too, so it'll be interesting to get your insight into this.
I'll be local enough. I would say no more than a mile and a half away from Ferries Yard there. Like, but more or less just the same as what John was saying. It was always a well run, kind of well marshalled place down there for young fellas to go. Like, whenever my young fella was a lot younger, you know, we're going back years, like, but he would have been interested to get down and watch, and as well as for the people going down to do the actual diffing. Like, it was great there on a weekend to go down. It was a good place to go down and spectate, you know. It was very safe, very well ran, and you'd feel comfortable taking your young people down there. You know. I suppose then as he got older, then he wanted to get a car himself and get out of himself. And sure, of course, you had a place where it wasn't on the roads. It was in an environment for that. Of course, you were going to let them. Whenever he got his own car.
And Michael, do you think it does keep them off the road? Like if they have a safe space? Because, you know, I mean, also when you're younger, that little bit of sort of threat or danger or, you know, flirting with the law or breaking the law, maybe that's part of it. I'm not talking about your kids now, don't get me wrong, but, like, if we did have the likes of Ferry's Yard open again, do you think it keeps it off the road?
Well, it has to. It would surely promote a far safer environment for it.
Like, yeah.
As I say, all through the years that I was going there, like, you would never have thought that a young fellow would ever be interested in going out and going mad in the road, like, because he had that place to go to, you know.
I get you, yeah. All right, there seems to be quite a lot of people in favour of this. Aidan received no contact back from local authority members as of yet, but a lot of people seem to see the sense in it. We'll see. Listen, Michael, thanks for that. I appreciate your time. If you have any views on that, keep them coming into us, 086 60 25,000. Morning. There's nothing for young people who are not sporty or into the GAA. Buncrana tried for 40 years for a skate park. Still none. No leisure centre either, but plenty of money for a big ugly sign. I don't mind that sign, but I take your point. That's your view. And this conversation really is about people, young people particularly, it seems, who are interested in their cars. They don't drink, you know, they don't do drugs. They're not involved in criminality. All of their love and passion goes into the cars. And then they've got nowhere really to sort of exercise that passion. A caller says, in a county that has very little young ones to do to keep them entertained and out of mischief, the old designated diffing centres are definitely needed. Let them burn rubber and let off steam in a safer manner. Let them have the bit of crack in a safe environment, says a listener. Another, I completely agree. Providing a safe place for diffing is a practical solution that benefits everyone. It's surprising this yard was rejected when road safety is a hot topic in Donegal. A designated area would reduce risks on our roads and guard our resources. Public roads aren't the place for them to perform these stunts due to safety concerns. Having designated places in the county needs to happen. That way enthusiasts can enjoy their driving skills without putting themselves or others at risk. And of course, you know, the element of putting others at risk is... The element of putting others at risk is the fact that maybe they don't have any tax insurance or cover. Ferries is a great place for them kids when you live in Manor. Does that man not think about the people that live near Ferries, Thorndale, Elmwood, down amongst other estates? They're 300 yards away as the crow flies and the noise is ridiculous. Typical. It's grand when it's not near them. Yeah, I was sort of thinking in the back of my head because I don't really know the geography of it. I was waiting for people who live nearby to maybe comment about the noise. Would it matter if that noise finished at 10 or if loud exhausts or revving outside the venue, you know, those rules were put in place? If you do live in the area, I'd be very interested in your views in relation to that. A caller says, who's paying for their tyres and modifications? Well, they are. You know, a lot of these young people are flat out working and doing odd jobs, doing proper jobs, whatever it might be. And they're not spending their money on cigs. They're not spending it on drink. And they're putting every penny they have into their cars. And if you don't sort of spend money in other areas, it does free up resources for that. And a lot of the work they can do on the cars themselves as well. On the subject of diffing, no license, no tax and no insurance. But the problem is no track. How would they get to the track? Jesus wept, says a caller. I presume on trailers, they'd tow the cars there. I'd imagine. I mean, you can't drive the car there, right? So, and it'd be like shooting fish in a barrel for Gardaí if they wanted to crack down on that. Just sit outside the venue waiting for cars to pull up. But I presume, you know, a lot of them might have a wee flatbed trailer available to them. A caller says, what's the difference in stock racing and diffing in Ferries? They are safe down there, away from the traffic. What's the problem with not allowing it? Well, I must have a look through, actually, as to the reasons it was refused. But there is the concern of local residents as well, which we haven't heard an awful lot from. I'm going to be honest with you, so I don't want to over-amplify that either, in case it's not as big an issue as the one text we received or the one of two texts. Right, OK, listen, keep your comments coming into us back after these messages. Right, now, more of your texts coming in. The situation in the Middle East. Even if Hamas agrees to the so-called peace deal, Israel will not stop until they totally level Gaza. Donald Trump and a war criminal have tailored the 20-point plan to favour Israel totally, and Palestine is not even considered. Yeah, well, it's as an individual state. I agree. I've read through the points of the plan, and I suppose I'm not really au fait enough to know the ins and outs of that. We're joined on the programme now by Sinn Féin councillor John Seamus O'Farrell. Good morning to you, John Seamus. How are you?
Good morning, Greg. I'm well, thank you.
Right. Glenveagh Castle, there's been disruptions of different forms to services there for different reasons. You hear for different reasons. But you're calling specifically for a reopening of Glenveagh Castle tours 7 days a week. What's the situation at the moment?
The situation at the moment, Greg, is that the castle is closed on the Monday and the Friday due to the lacking of staff, according to, that's the question Piers Doherty raised at the Dáil recently, and there's no plans to, you know, employ more people to have this facility opened again. It sends a bad message out in relation to Glenveagh and the tourist industry here in Donegal that it's only open 5 days a week.
Yeah, and if you're on holidays here Wednesday to Wednesday, you know what I mean? You don't expect to turn up to, you know, one of the jewels in our county's crown and the signs up saying no tourists today.
Yeah, or even during the year as well, that the probably 7 or 8 bank holidays, and, you know, families tend to travel, take the families away for the day, for the weekend, and coming to Donegal. If you come to Donegal on a bank holiday Monday and you plan to go to Glenveagh, you can't go into the castle, which is, you know, to me is ridiculous. The main question here, Greg, is that we need to get this resolved soon as, because the amount of tourists that come into the area over the last number of years to the castle, that's increasing all the time.
It's kind of embarrassing. In fact, it is embarrassing. So if you imagine a scenario where we're spending millions to try and attract tourists from America. So let's say, you know, a family of six from Germany land over here. And they say, right, let's go to Glenveagh. You know, they've spent millions advertising this spot. It must be fantastic. And they land up there and it's closed due to a lack of staff. They would say, well, what kind of a tourism industry is this county, this country providing? It's embarrassing. It's actually embarrassing.
Yeah, exactly what I said before, sending a bad message out in relation to Donegal and Glenveagh National Park. To me, the main question is, if it's staffing related, was there advertisement done in relation to recruiting new staff? We need to give them the proper, you know, the proper training and all this and all that with new staff coming on board. But at the end of the day, as you said, Greg, it looks terrible, and people coming into the area and the local economy gets hit as well.
Well, that's it,
know,
isn't it? It's not just the...
It's only open 5 days.
Yeah, it's the spend locally as well. It's other businesses around it. You take it off your tour, you know. You just don't go near that area, potentially.
Yeah. But you have Mount Errigal there as well, huge amount of tourists come on a daily basis and a weekend basis. Number of charity events you have in Oha, you have the Donegal Airport, and you have some lovely beaches in the west. And I'm sure all of them people call into Glenveagh when they're here in the area in the west of Donegal. And to me, it's mind-boggling that, you know, the castle, the main attraction in Glenveagh, is absolutely beautiful. The gardens, the lake, the scenery is absolutely fantastic. And that the fact that, you know, Monday and Friday is closed.
So what is the upshot? If you don't have the answer, we can make our own inquiries. Has the management at Glenveagh National Park applied to, what is it, Department of Environment, Parks and Wildlife? Have they applied for additional staff and been refused?
Well, that's the question I want to ask them. Has the staffing requirement, how many staff did need? Has the advertisement been put in local papers? And how long are we going to wait until we get this up and running again? That's the question I would like to ask.
Is there an active recruitment program?
Your question there is an active recruitment program there. When was it advertised and when will you see people in place?
Yeah, so those are the core issues. Well, I mean, we can contact them locally. I'm almost 100% sure we've covered this in the past. And this has been ongoing.
I'm
and
there sure was a, dead and probably other councillors.
There was just a little bit of a story well, behind yeah. the story, if I remember correctly, but I don't want to speak off the top of my head. But look, as I say, you can't have part-time one of your biggest tourism attractions. Like it's like shutting off Sleeve League 2 days a week or...
Yeah, well, it's exactly...
Sutton off Arranmore Island or wherever, you know, you just, it really is, it's poor form. And it's like a car that, you know, do you ever have a car and you know, it's playing up on you, but it's not actually going to fully brake and you can't trust that car anymore?
I've had many of them in my...
Well, me too. And I'm driving one at the moment, right? But that's what this is like. You know, you distrust whether it's going to be open or not. All right, John Seamus, thanks for your time. Yeah. We'll see
Thank
if we can get
much
to the bottom of
it.
Slán. Sinn Féin councillor John Seamus O'Fahey there. 086 60 25,000. Maybe you're in Glenveagh and you can give us some information in relation to that. Is it as simple as there aren't enough staff? Have staff been applied for? Has whomever is the governing body, to say, was it Parks and Wildlife? Is it the Department of Environment? I'm not really quite sure. We'll find that out. You know, if they said, you know, we're not giving you any further staff, who chooses the days? Or is it about people being asked to do multiple jobs? I don't know, but we'll get to the bottom of it and find out what's going on. You've been texting in on various topics this morning. In terms of the food we eat, and just a study today that shows that food inflation is running ahead of regular inflation for some reason or not. And I just, you know, I just find it interesting that, you know, we're very faithful to shops and, you know, big retailers. And they're all incredibly profitable and they're all increasing their profits all the time. And yet the cost of food is going up all the while. And I wonder how much of these increases they're absorbing to try and repay our loyalty to them, if you know what I mean. Because there's people in this country that are struggling to actually eat and certainly struggling to eat the right amount of foods. Yet we've got companies that are making, international companies, Irish companies, that are making an absolute fortune because they keep increasing their prices. Could they not absorb some of those? Or maybe one of them could step away and say, do you know what, for the next couple of years, maybe we could reduce our profits by 10% and make it more affordable, increase footfall to those shops. I'm not saying there's a cartel or anything like that, don't get me wrong, but it's just interesting that all of the brands that we're so loyal to all are making fantastic profits, all are exceeding their expectations, and yet food's getting more expensive and some people can't eat correctly. There's something wrong there, I think, anyway. But this listener says malnourishment is the biggest cause of emergency department overcrowding throughout the country. Very little nourishment in the food we're eating as it travels too far. Until we address this, when the National Health Authority 2 years ago recommended that every citizen in the country should take vitamin D supplements from today, October till April, there's no incentive from our government to address this. But I mean, people can choose to take those. Probably not. I must try that, actually. You kind of accept that you've got less energy and stuff in the winter. Maybe boosting one's vitamin intake might help. But does it help? I've tried it in the past and I just thought it was... I don't know. Anyway, let me know. Greg, I'm a truck driver and I can see into other cars. There was a girl on the phone this morning the entire route of the dual carriageway into Letterkenny, held to her ear with no concern to anyone around her. Yeah, it still happens. And I think there was a survey that showed something like 6 or 7% of us do that. I think it's higher. Hi, Greg. Please highlight this on the show if it's okay to do so. Yes, I actually did. Yeah, okay. I've already mentioned that. I'm a resident. Well, I'll read this email before the break. I'm a resident of Ballybofane Stranorlar for over 40 years, but I've never experienced our roads in such a disgraceful state. For anyone who regularly travels through Ballybofane Stranorlar or our neighbouring town of Castlefin, not only the main road, but the approach roads are now in an appalling condition. From my understanding, the NRAs, or the TAI as they're called now, are responsible for the primary roads. Our local authority are responsible for local roads. So if you take this rule, does the primary road not run through these towns? If you've travelled from Donegal Town to Letterkenny, the TAI have spent vast sums of money resurfacing Lurkey Brack and Drumkeen. And just this week, the 29th of September, are now doing resurfacing parts of Barnesmore Gap. Yet travel through Castlefin or the Twin Towns, you would have to ask, who exactly plans the upkeep of these roads? What a fascinating point. I'm going to read on in a second, but when you think of the work that's going on in the gap at the moment, McGrory's Brae being completely realigned and resurfaced, the work that's been done to improve Drumkeen and elsewhere, also, obviously, Lurgy Breck, did I mention? McGrory's Brae, sorry, I meant to say, and Lurgy Breck. Yet you go through Ballyface Norler and it's brutal. I was through it, obviously, and I wonder, I think the great crater of McClay's Corner has been filled, has it? I didn't spot it, but maybe it hasn't been filled. We were talking about this great crater for quite a bit on the show. If you're a regular driver on that, let me know, was the crater filled? But anyway, whatever time I'm reading on here, whatever time they do start, there are that many potholes and uneven services in the Twin Towns, they would need to close the main road off completely. The entire town will come to a complete standstill, God forbid. They do detour traffic around Dreenan, where the Trusk Road T junction is a patchwork of balls of tar and has been this way for a number of years. Are there no council engineers ever travelling these roads? I can only imagine that our six local councillors are regularly hearing from locals on the dreadful condition of our roads. I can only summarise that they are not being listened to by Minister Dara Cleary, who I believe was recently in the county. Maybe I'm mistaken that this is not poor road management, poor road maintenance conditions, but are the council's way of new traffic calming measures? Is this the same councillor who introduced four pedestrian crossing death traps for pedestrians? It wasn't the council, though, with no flashing lights or even a small speed bump or a rumble strip warning motorists that they're approaching a crossing. These are serious accident or deaths waiting to happen. I'd like to have seen now if there was any safety statement with this idea. Finally, with the current state of our roads, apart from the ones the NRA control, it actually looks like our council go to the government with cap in hand looking for the crumbs that fall from the NRA's table. All right, a lot there. 086 60 25,000. Councillor Michael McClafferty is with me now. Good morning, Michael. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Morning, listeners.
Air codes, you've a concern about them?
Yeah, just a slight concern, Greg, to be fair. Just when listening to what I'm to say there this morning, you mentioned about the sea levels and so on rising. Mm. Clearly that is happening. There's no dispute about that, and it is happening in certain areas more so than others. But the situation with the air codes is, I suppose for some people, unfortunately, down through the years, particularly in the Celtic Tiger years, where their houses or housing estates got built, they are, as we see in recent times, deemed as floodplains. Some, unfortunately, have got flooded and so on. We all appreciate that aspect, and that's quite obvious where that's going to happen, where is that? But on the other side of it is, it has come to light in recent times about insurance companies, people insuring their houses and so on, just going to renew their insurance or whatever, or maybe particularly leaving insurance to have and going to a new company, price of a new company anyway. And then the company comes back then and says that's a huge price because you're in risk of getting flooded.
Mm-hmm.
Your air code doesn't correspond. So, I mean, there's all this to consider. Like, I know of one person got a ridiculous price and they said they were in a... They're in a danger of flood area. They're nowhere next to near a flood area.
Well, that was just in relation to that. Is that a turn of phrase, like saying they're nowhere near a flood area, or are they? In other words, if you think on it, are there spaces? What I'm trying to get to the bottom of is, are they using air codes for general areas or for specific threats, right? So do you think there's any argument in this case that you talk of that maybe in the townland that this neighbour or this person that you're familiar with where they applied for insurance, that there is potentially a flood risk? Do you know what I mean? I'm trying to figure out, are they using air codes specifically or generally for areas?
Well, I don't know what way the insurance companies are viewing the air codes as such, if you like. Like, I know myself, for example, as far as I understand, my own house here where I live, I'm 300 feet above sea level. The other house that I'm thinking on in mind that I know of will be something along the same lines.
Mm.
But the bottom line is, there will never be any risk of getting flooded. That's for sure.
Yeah,
in that respect that they're talking about. And the other thing is as well, as I was saying to Carolyn there, before we went in the air there as well about the air codes, we all bang in the air codes now into our sat-navs, whatever, particularly when we're in strange places. Like, I know of one case there one day in Northern Ireland, there across the border, so somebody went to the north of a lorry. They were taking 27 mile off course.
Mm-hmm.
They banged in the air code they had. 27 mile took them off course, like. So, I mean, there's all this as well. You can, what I'm saying is just fine. If whatever corresponds going on with your air code, if that matches up, fine. But if you're in doubt, you're best checking it. Just to see,
yeah, of course, definitely with travel. Well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, can you, do we know if you can appeal to an insurance company? Like, can you say, listen, you know, the information you have on my air code's not accurate? And, you know, will they allow you to demonstrate that it's wrong? Or, you know, it would be terrible if you ended up having to pay an extra high premium for no reason, if that makes sense.
Well, it does make sense, Greg, and that will be the case. You will pay the extra premium unless you challenge it, or unless you ask them for evidence. I don't know what was the answer to that particular case when it went that way, but that is the situation on it. Another case I know of, because camper vans quite regularly, and we're just using camper vans as an example, it's not, no swipe at camper vans, but it's just the fact of the matter is, camper vans quite regularly end up in this certain townland as well, this area, and despite the people in the certain townland rectifying it several times on Google Maps, when they look again, then it's put back again.
So what's happening there? Sorry, say that one more time.
Camper vans and others happen to go into this particular place that there's no need for them to go into. They're going in genuinely thinking the road is taking them somewhere where it doesn't. But the people in question and others have rectified it several times on Google Maps.
Yeah.
That's okay for a while, and then when they look down again, it's put back down again to go on there again. Like, so, I mean,
yeah, but you see,
you're keen up against it as well.
But what's happening is you've got the camper community probably identifying it as a place where you can go. Look, Google Maps or Waves or whatever one you're using. Like, you need to be able to tell them what kind of a vehicle you're in, because people will know listening around the county. Google Maps will send a camper van or a caravan up a road that it would be okay for a car in. It's a messy old system that, and people just follow, as you've outlined earlier, follow the sat nav blindly. Right, okay, it'll be interesting actually to find out officially if you can make a case or an argument. In fact, you know what, our listeners are the best pool for that, to find out if you can contest your air code. You know, if you can say, look it, I'm 300 feet above of sea level, I'm not near the sea, no river, I'm not a flood risk. Can you make that, you know, can you reflect that in the insurance premium? We'll check that out, Michael. Thanks for that. Appreciate it.
Okay, Greg, thank you.
Bye-bye. So have you successfully appealed an air code flood risk quote and got it cheaper? Right, some comments as we head towards the news at 10 o'clock. And this was an email we got in, and we try and help wherever we can. Can anyone explain why divorce cases are taking so long? My solicitor says that they're going back to 2018 with some cases. Wow, that's 7 years. Donegal's supposed to be the only county with this problem. What is going on? If there is abuse in the marriage, this is wrong. It's a drawn-out process. I instigated my divorce in 2020. My case is only coming at the end of case registration. This is miles from being concluded. There is something wrong with the system. So we got onto the court services to find out what's going on, because, you know, this is more than just an inconvenience. And Jerry Curran, the media relations advisor with the court service, responded as follows. In general, the waiting time for a contested divorce in Donegal is between 48 to 52 weeks. So that's effectively a year. Shorter periods are experienced where matters are not contested by either party. The waiting time depends on many factors, and sometimes cases are just not ready to proceed, as disclosure may be outstanding from one or both sides. Issues over financial matters, property diversion, pensions, child custody and access will all significantly lengthen the time that a case goes in case progression before the court registrar, before it gets listed for hearing. So, like, I'm reading between the lines here, and it sounds to me like maybe the other side of this former relationship is filibustering, or whatever that phrase is, purposely trying to drag it out to make it very difficult for the other person. Because in general, and, you know, the courts service obviously have access to this information, a contested divorce case normally runs 48 to 52 weeks, shorter periods where it's not contested. So if it's going on for 5 years, I would imagine the other party is withholding information that is required to progress it, but perhaps doing it within the time frame to purposely frustrate it, but not fall foul, if that makes sense, which perhaps shouldn't be allowed to happen, because if that were an abuser, for an example, that allows them to continue to perpetrate the abuse long after potentially the relationship has ended. So maybe something that needs looking at. If you've experience of that or you can help that listener, very much appreciate it, to 086 60 25000. Now, Ree Diffing. Hello, my elderly parents live beside the Diffing track in Manor Conyngham, and they are being badly plagued by the noise. When the track is active, loud noise goes on for hours, and afterwards the driver take to the back roads. This will only teach some people to do donuts, and that they will then take that behaviour onto public roads in the evenings. Another, I have a dash cam footage of someone doing donuts outside the tyre shop close to me. These people have zero concern for anyone's health and safety, and now we're going to reward these people. It would be better if we arrested them and put them in jail and destroyed their cars. They've no concern for our safety, so I've no concern for theirs when we lock them up. Now, that's people that are out there breaking the law. Are there not, though, other young people who are saying, right, we're not prepared to break the law. Give us somewhere to diff. Now, the one location has come up over and over again. There's no campaign specifically for that, I don't think, somewhere for them. But I don't think we should tar all people who like their cars and like to diff with the same brush as this idiot that's diffing on a public road, if that makes sense. I drive a Lexus car and totally agree. We need somewhere to do this safely. Providing a safe place would keep us off the roads. That's the view of another listener there. I agree with Michael Ree the Diffing. Stop rally cars racing in Glenveagh National Park on the R254. They block the road and do time trials. If I blocked a regional road, I'd be arrested. Why do rally drivers get a free pass? I wonder, is that sort of like a follow-up of a previous concern we had in the lead-up to the rally there? Councillor Joy Bird has sent in, or Joy Beard, I beg your pardon, has sent in this voice message on this issue.
Good morning, it's Councillor Joy Beard. I have been listening to the show yesterday and today, representation being made about a dedicated place for Diffin. And I'd just like to say, as a local representative, I have received no correspondence from anyone. It's an idea I would like to explore to see how feasible it would be. But obviously there's a lot of discussion needing to be had. But to date, I've not received any information whatsoever, no emails, no phone calls. So if anybody wants to reach out to me, I'm here and happy to listen. So I just wanted to put that on the record that I'm a local representative and I haven't heard anything, no emails or no phone calls in relation to this. But it's a very interesting idea and something that I do think needs to be explored.
Well, fair point. You can only work on what you've on information you've received. Councillor Joy Bird, prepared to... Why is my mic popping? I don't know why it's popping. Anyway, Joe Beard prepared to work in relation to that. Right, and don't forget you can also send your voice messages via WhatsApp to 086 60 25000.